You are listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Welcome to the latest edition of the Thomas Merton Center Show, a program that highlights the ideas and activities of members of a unique peace and social justice organization in Western Pennsylvania. My name is John Hare, and today we're talking with Pittsburgh-based playwright Tammy Ryan. Tammy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, readers of the latest edition of The New People, the center's monthly publication, have learned that a new drama penned by Tammy, called Molly's Hammer, has opened in St. Louis, of all places, to glowing reviews, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
The Molly with the Hammer is, of course, well, surprise, Thomas Merton Center founder and former director, our beloved Molly Rush. One St. Louis reviewer called Molly's Hammer a transformative experience. Wow. We want to see the play here. Tammy, tell us about the play.
It's inspired by the book Hammer of Justice by Leanne Ellison Norman, which tells the story of Molly Rush and the Plowshares 8, the first Plowshares action in 1980 when Molly, along with seven other activists, went into a GE plant and hammered a nose cone, damaging it and ripping up documents and pouring their blood on the scene to protest the buildup of a nuclear arsenal. And for those of you, many of you probably know the story, there was a trial. Molly, who is a mother of six, but also, you know, active in social justice, you know, since civil rights, spent some time in jail, and eventually they were convicted of, I can't remember the counts right now, but
damaging a weapon of mass destruction,
right.
Perhaps?
Yes.
Something
there were a couple of counts. There were like 13 counts thrown against them, including terroristic threats and burglary and et cetera. But I thought it was a remarkable story when I read the book, and I was particularly drawn by the relationship of Molly and her husband, Bill. So the story is sort of told through the lens of their marriage.
Tell me what interested you about that relationship. And also, I think we should mention that Molly's co-conspirators were wearing clerical collars because they were priests. I think we had one or two Berrigans involved
in
that.
Daniel and Philip Berrigan.
Yeah.
Sister Aunt Montgomery. And the others, I don't know. I don't think the others were priests, but she was. Some of them were parents too, but Molly was sort of looked at as special because she was a mom,
right.
And she was, you know, making this sacrifice, and you know, basically as an ordinary person, like any of us.
A mom from Dormont.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what interested you about the relationship that you saw?
Well, you know, Molly, she was going to do this, and you know, as I said, I've been working in, you know, for peace and social justice, you know, her whole life. So, it wasn't a big surprise that she was going to do something. But her husband Bill, I think, was a little. Back that she was risking going to prison, you know, maybe for 30 years, which would have been the rest of her life. And as a playwright, I saw this as, you know, a great way into the play because he wants to stop her. Most of my plays, while a lot of my plays deal with issues of, you know, social issues, they usually come through the lens of family.
Sure.
So I also know this family coming from a big Irish Catholic family from Queens. I understood this tribe, you know, and I said, I could tell this story. So that's why I took it on.
I think
one of the reasons.
We have Bill, I think was a former Marine, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, he was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I know he organized lots of softball teams there in Dormont, and I know they had a wonderful relationship, but No doubt, such activities would put a tremendous kind of strain on it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting story, and the St. Louis rep did a beautiful job in performing it, and they actually flew Molly out for the opening, which was thrilling.
Is this the first performance of the play?
Yes, it's the world premiere. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Gee, too bad we couldn't do it here.
Well,
I know it's not your choice. Right.
Maybe, you know, plays have to get tried out first a little bit sometimes before theaters will pick them up. But
right.
I'm hopeful, and actually, we'll be planning a reading of the play probably in the fall, a public reading. I'm thinking as a fundraiser, actually, for the Thomas Merton Center, and I'm working with a theater company called Real Life Intervention, and they're going to help me put it together, and I'm going to work with the Thomas Merton Center to make it a fundraiser.
So tell us a little bit about how the play is structured.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's told with three characters, Molly, Bill, and a character who begins as Daniel Berrigan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of direct address in the play because there's a lot of information the audience needs to know to sort of understand the situation. But I also saw the story as coming from two different narratives, Bill's version of events and Molly's version of events. So they both sort of talk to the audience about, you know, the what happened. And then there's a series of scenes where we watch these situations play out dramatically, and the actor who plays Daniel Berrigan plays all the other characters.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's like about 10 more characters, family members, the judge in the trial, a security guard at GE, you know, various characters to help tell the story. So it's very theatrical in that way.
Was much time spent on some of the questions I'm sure many people have when they hear this story is, how in the world would they get in a classified facility like this, and what what gave them some sort of special knowledge about how to do all this?
Well, I would refer people to the book Hammer of Justice, which, you know, tells the whole story about how they did it and the planning that was involved and stuff like that. But in my, I don't go into that too much in my play. But basically, they walked in. There was no one stopped them. They didn't break in as you know, they were first accused of doing. They knew, you know, probably, I don't even know how they knew, but they knew that this was a place that was building these parts for nuclear weapons, and many people in the community of King of Prussia, where this plant was, didn't know what was being built there. But they did a lot of planning for it. They prepared for different scenarios, and miraculously, it went off without a hitch. They just walked in, seemed to be able to find exactly where the nose cones were sitting. There were two sitting out there as if they were waiting for them. and they, you know, accomplished what they set out to do.
And no doubt was big news, not just in media, but around the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I didn't live in Pittsburgh at the time, but it seems that it was, you know, Molly was a local hero at the time. For that, and she was also on the Phil Donahue show, which that piqued my interest, and my play actually ends with Molly on the Phil Donahue show.
On the Phil Donahue show.
Yeah.
those of us that know Molly, it's such a wonderful thought to imagine that. It'd be great to see it in the play.
Yeah.
We're kind of up against a break time now, but we're going to be coming back and talking some more, not just about Molly's Hammer, although we do have some more to talk about there, but also about playwriting around social justice issues, which I have a lot of questions about.
Okay, great.
So this is the Thomas Merton Center show on We Are Pittsburgh, and we'll be back with social activist playwright Tammy Ryan after this break.
The International Union of Operating Engineers, Local 66, works with builders and contractors to build a better community. Local 66's tradesmen and women have received the specialty training needed to meet the complex challenges of any project, making them the most capable workforce in the region. From schools, highways, and pipeline projects to casinos and arenas, the operating engineers build any job, large or small. For over 100 years, Local 66 has provided superior service that our community can count on. They are your one-stop resource for qualified and productive operating engineers and heavy equipment mechanics. To learn more about the benefits of organized labor and more information about the International Union of Operating Engineers Local 66, go to www.iuoe66.org. That's www.iuoe66.org.
Hey, this is Charles Showalter, host of the Union Edge Laborers Talk Radio. I want to tell you about an organization I'm proud to be part of, the Union Veterans Council. My friend Will Fisher runs the program. Will, he's a Marine and a member of the Painters Union. Will and the Veterans Council bring folks together and advocate on issues that are most important to veterans, especially the need for good jobs and a strong, fully funded, fully staffed Veterans Administration. Additionally, the Union Veterans Council works to remind folks that an attack on workers is an attack on veterans, and veterans and workers are one and the same. When vets like myself get out of the service, we're looking for good, family-supporting jobs. That's a union job, and the Veterans Council is at the tip of the spear in the lead for these fights. In short, the Union Veterans Council stands for a better life and fights for those who have fought for us. You can learn more about the Union Veterans Council at www.unionveterans.org. That's www.unionveterans.org. This Veterans Info Minute is sponsored by actohio.org. That's actohio.org.
I'm Edward James Olmos, and I'm here with my local letter carriers and store clerks from the United Food and Commercial Workers to remind you that Saturday, May 14th is the annual Stamp on Hunger food drive. The reality of hunger in our communities is disturbing. 1 in 7 Americans does not have enough to eat. That includes seniors, children, even military veterans. But you can help in the fight against hunger, and it's easy. Just leave a bag of non-perishable food by your mailbox the morning of Saturday, May 14th, and your letter carrier will do the rest. All food collected goes directly to food banks and pantries in your community. Hunger in America is a real problem, but we can all be part of the solution. Saturday, May 14th, please join me, the National Association of Letter Carriers, and their partners, and stamp out hunger.
Man, do I love card night. You ready, boys? You got a king?
Go, Fish Stack!
Oh, come on! This is WWE superstar Titus O'Neil. The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Jason Derulo, and I love the fact that music connects to people all over the country. But unfortunately, so does something else: childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. However, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks is able to help provide over 3 billion meals to children and families in need all across the country. Join me in the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America. A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
You're listening to We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio, and this is the Thomas Merton Center Show. I'm John Hare. Our guest is playwright Tammy Ryan. Tammy, what do you feel makes a compelling drama about social justice themes?
Well, I don't, you know, set out to write social issue plays necessarily. They usually start from questions that I have personally about, you know, different things that impact me, my community, my family. And as I said before, often I tell these stories through the lens of family. So I think the personal is political. I think that's the best way to approach social issues. Otherwise, you know, you have to compel people. You have to engage them emotionally. And that's what a play does. You know, I feel as an artist, I have an obligation to sort of deal with the social issues of my time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, it's just I don't think about it that much. It just sort of has come out as part of my process.
But as opposed to a family issue where the issue may be one's problem regarding a certain relationship or illness or something like that.
Right.
There are social issues impinging on that relationship, right? There are,
right.
There are, and I guess in Molly's case, it was the tremendous burden of knowledge about what the burden on the world was of the Vietnam War and the development of nuclear weapons and the growth of nuclear weapons, and that becomes a family issue then.
Right.
It must have been, I know all of us, when we heard about Molly, our first thought was, is she really going to go to jail for 20 and 30 years? And she was prepared to it, for
right.
it. Does that comprise some of the dialogue in the play? Or is
oh,
it
yeah,
sort of
right.
Play?
No, that's sort of the whole point of the play. And again, it's sort of where I'm interested as a writer, as a playwright. I'm looking for the personal, you know, and how the larger world, how the personal interacts with the larger world and the larger world impacts the personal. And actually, one of the things that triggered me to want to write this play, Leanne Norman, who wrote Hammer of Justice, had given me the book years ago to adapt to the stage. And at the time, I had other projects going on, and I put it on my shelf. What caused me to come back to it was actually the massacre at Sandy Hook, when the children were murdered, and one of the fathers said in an interview, "What are we prepared to do to protect our children?" And I immediately thought of Molly, because that was her, you know, that was the whole premise of her action, you know, what she needed to do to protect her children, because she felt we were, you know, about to blow ourselves up. So just to answer your question about what makes a social justice play, to me, it's one in which the individual has to deal with these pressures from outside, but it's always told through a personal story, because that's what theater is. That's what makes it interesting to people, when you again engage them on an emotional level.
Yes.
So I may not tell all the details of the history of what happened, but I think that at least in the production in St. Louis, people really responded to it because they could relate to it. Because Molly is an ordinary person, just like them, and the message of the play is that is one of hope. Actually, you know, not to despair.
Right.
That you can, you know, take action. You can change the world. It might not happen immediately. It might not be everything that you want. It, you know, change takes time. But if everyone takes action, you know, there'll be evolution, if not revolution.
We all know Molly as a woman of great spirituality too. It's not always apparent in her everyday relations. She really, if anything, seems like an incredibly practical person.
Mm-hmm.
But no doubt, her conscience and all of her actions are informed by her understanding of the world, and I think her understanding of the way the world ought to be, and she's committed to make it that way.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was, you know, inspired by that too. And her, you know, the influence of Thomas Merton on her thinking and on her action. And, that's an element of the play, you know, it's not a huge part of it, but, the idea that she feels that she's doing, you know, what God wants her to do. And, you know, to turn, in fact, one of the first things she says in the first sort of argument, confrontation with her husband is, "I feel that it would be a sin not to act," given what she knew.
Mm-hmm.
and you know, the opportunity to do this. You know, she felt compelled to.
We should mention that Molly did actually serve some time. I forget how
three
much.
Months.
3 months.
Three months total, I think. And a couple of different jails.
And during that time, there was a lot of uncertainty about the future for her and her family. We should say, and I know, knowing Bill, that he's a wonderful, loving partner as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that these are real questions that come up and must be dealt with. And even though they're seen from different perspectives by different people.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, the play in a lot of ways is, I think of it as a love story, actually, between mm-hmm. Bill and Molly. And I sort of focused on him because he represents sort of the audience's questions in the beginning. Like, uh-huh. What? You're going to do what? What? This is crazy. What are you doing? But he actually makes the biggest change in the play, to actually becoming one of her strongest supporters. It constitutes the sort of emotional arc of the play, the transformation that he makes at the end.
I don't want to give away too much of the play because I'm really hopeful that there will be a way in which we can have it produced here. Just on the practical side, as a playwright, do you also have the I guess you may be the first one. You're not necessarily employing an agent to try to have your play seen at this point. I know the economics of it are not so great.
Well, no, I have an agent, and she is sending out the play to, you know, theaters around the country, actually. There's a lot of theaters mm-hmm. reading it and considering it right now.
Oh, great.
And I don't want to jinx it, but, you know, I feel confident there will be another production of it. I don't know about when it would get to Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing in the works for Pittsburgh unless, things change, but I am going to do this reading. I mean, that's the first step because I would like Leanne to hear the play because
oh, yes.
she hasn't heard the final version. And also for all of Molly's supporters and, you know, people who support the Thomas Merton Center. So, and as a way to thank Molly for her, blessing.
Yes.
Really, I met with Molly and Bill and I talked with them and she shared a lot with me and, her support of this was really meant a lot to me. And I'd like to give back by doing some kind of fundraiser for the Thomas Merton Center. So, you know, that's the first step. And then, you know, sometimes, generating that kind of excitement and energy might lead to something.
Yes, we'll indeed. Sometimes, the artist goes away from their hometown and mm-hmm. and success happens and suddenly people in their hometown discover the artist. Oh,
right.
She's one of ours.
Right. Well, I my plays do get produced in Pittsburgh at the Pittsburgh Playhouse. They've produced a lot of my plays. So, it's not like I'm not supported here, but, you know, it takes time sometimes
sure.
for plays to find the right home.
And I think also subject matters come to the fore and, and perhaps there's new thought being given to nuclear war. And,
right,
and,
yeah. It's actually a little bit scary
look,
reading the news. I like my plays to be timely, but sometimes I don't really want them to be that timely.
I understand. Tammy, we're about running out of time.
Okay.
Can you tell us, for folks that are interested in this discussion and about you and your other plays, how they can find out a little bit more about your plays?
Well, you could go to my website, mm-hmm. which is www.tammyryan.net, and you can read about this production of Molly's Hammer and, there's information about my other plays. You could go to the Repertory Theater of St. Louis's website, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of information about the play and the production, along with a wonderful trailer of the production, so you can get a sense of the actors. And
great.
It's a nice little piece.
Tammy, thank you so much. What a pleasure to have you on the show. We're looking forward to seeing Molly's Hammer and your other plays as they become available to us. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Thomas Merton Center Show on We Are Pittsburgh Talk Radio. Become a member. Subscribe to our monthly publication, The New People. Go to www.thomasmertoncenter.org or call us at 412-361-3022. I'm John Hare. Thanks for listening.